Today I have the pleasure of introducing to you Shelley Neff from Urban Betty in Austin, Texas. She shares with us her journey from booth renter to salon owner and more recently getting completely out from behind the chair. She's built a profitable business with a team of 33, and I know you're going to really enjoy her story because she's so willing to share with us her journey of weathering the storms and always finding the blessing in disguise. So let's jump straight into her show.
You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective Podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLeman.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Shelley. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited about today's chat because I think you've got some amazing stuff to share with us. Why don't you start by telling us about how you got to where you are today, when you opened your salon, and how did you come up with the name? Tell us your story.
Okay. I opened Urban Betty in 2005, and that was about 10 years after doing hair and kind of going through all the different ways of doing hair, hourly, sweatshop hair, commission only, and then I went to booth rental, and then the next progressive step was to open my salon. And I started cosmetology school when I was 16, so I was actually licensed when I was 18. So when I opened my salon, I was very young. I was 27, which now I think back and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was crazy. But there was just something in me, and it's, you can't explain it. You just have this drive and this feeling to do it. And I just kind of jumped and I did it. And it was myself. And I had one girl that was working at the salon, and she was just a contractor for me. And we had six chairs. I was like, I just want it tiny and small and six chairs, and I want everybody to be contractors because I don't want to be anybody's boss, and you know, I'll just see what happens from there. I mean, really no formal business training at all. And that was, you know, and it's one of those things, like, had I known all that would go into it then, I probably would have never done it. So I feel like ignorance is bliss. It's a great thing to kind of not know all the struggles that are going to cause you to grow, because you'd be too scared to do them if you knew them ahead of time, which that's the story of life, I feel like.
I totally agree.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And so I just kind of reached out to everyone that I had been close to in former salons and let them know I was opening a salon. And if you know anyone who's looking for a place to work, here's the logistics, here's what the rent payments per week are going to be. And so slowly but surely, I had a few people come over and start renting for me. And it took about a year to get all six spaces filled. And even in that year, one of the things that happened is three girls came over from a local salon in town that they had signed a non-compete with. And I was like, oh, nobody ever enforces those. They're dumb, blah, blah, blah. Come on over. Who cares? People do enforce those. So that was my first, like, oh crap, what have I done? And they had to leave. They had to actually go and work somewhere else for a year until their contract was up with that other salon. They served me papers. They served them papers. It was intense. I think they really wanted to set an example with their salon for any future employees that, yeah, we're serious about that. And so anyway, what was kind of a blessing in disguise is those girls left, and I may be getting off on a track here, but I'll get back to it. But they left and went to another salon, but the other salon they went to were like, they were like, hey, where were you working before? And they were like, great salon, Urban Betty. You should go work there. So then several of those girls came over and actually filled their spots. And then when those girls, the year was up, they came back. So then it was a full staff. And I was like, okay, that was the blessing. So cut back to me opening the salon. Like, I really just did it initially to, hey, I just want all this money that, you know, I'm making from doing hair just to kind of go in my pocket, and all the people I have working here, they're going to pay all the bills at the salon. It's just going to work out great. And, you know, anyone who owns a business would laugh at me for that. Little did I know how much it costs to run a salon. So I really was working behind the chair 6 days a week, and it was just getting to be too much. I didn't have anybody at the front desk, and I was just running on empty, and I was doing all the color purchasing for myself. You know, everyone else purchased their own color because they were contractors, but doing all the retail. And then I had a girl reach out to me that wanted to be in my assistant, and I was like, yes, okay, I can only afford to pay you $200 a week. And she was like, I'll take it. And
right.
So she came on, and she was my first ever employee. And I was like, okay, this is all I can handle, one employee. And because I don't even know how to, you know, cut a paycheck. And my aunt, luckily, is my accountant, and she walked me through it. And I was using QuickBooks at the time, and she showed me, like, it's not as hard as you think. And she helped me figure out how to set up the payroll and have this one employee. And then once I was like, okay, I'm going to have her be my assistant for a year. And she was kind of the front desk staff and my assistant. And then we kept growing and growing and realized, okay, we need people, one person to work the front desk. And after a year of her assisting me, I was like, let me put her on the floor, but she can't obviously be a contractor. She has no clientele.
Hmm.
So I put her on the floor, and she is doing great. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this employee is making me way more money than contractors are. And so that was kind of my first like aha moment of maybe I want employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the name Urban Betty, I mean, I'll go back and forth, it just because I kind of skipped that, is my name. It's Betty Michelle. And Betty is my grandmother's name. It's not short for Elizabeth. And so I came up with Urban Betty just kind of based on, you know, combining urban from, I like the brand Urban Decay Makeup. And I thought of my name, Betty, because I was like Betty Salon. And then Urban Betty just kind of came together. And I checked online, you know, was it online anywhere? And it wasn't. The website, everything was open. And so that was just my go ahead. And then I set up an S corporation with that name. And I had actually done that while I was renting as a booth renter, because you save taxes being a booth renter if you're a corporation versus self-employed. So when mm-hmm. I found my brick and mortar location, all the paperwork was already in place. So I would tell people out there, if you're looking right now and you're a contractor, go ahead and get your corporation set up, get your website set up, do all those little things, because it's way too hard to do them once you're opening a salon and everything else. Get all those little things into place, especially if you're applying for a business loan, because they'll want all that anyway.
Sure.
So get back to that. Having one employee, saw it wasn't as hard as I thought. I can do this. I get to a space where we're overflowing with people working there, which is great. We had 6 chairs. We slowly added on a couple more, moved things around. Oh, crap. Now we need 2 more. So we were 1,700 square feet. We had 10 stations. We were busting at the seams. It was about half employees, half contractors. And I was like, okay, there's a bigger space in my shopping center that's going to be available in a year. And I talked to the shopping center and got first right of refusal on that space, which was a great thing, because when it became available, they came to me first. And I asked if I wanted it, and I said yes.
Right.
And I don't know if you...
How long ago is that now?
That was 6 years ago, January 5th, that we moved into the larger space. So it's kind of like half and half. We were in the smaller space for 6 years, and now we've been in this bigger space for 6 years.
Yeah.
I signed a 7-year lease on it, so end of this year, I'm going to sign another 5 years.
And you've grown within that space again, haven't you?
We have, and it's, you know, one huge pitfall that happened is when I moved into the bigger space, I went from 1,700 square feet to 3,400 square feet. And I would tell most people now, don't do that. Get yourself, yeah, get yourself in a good position in a smaller location, 2,000 square feet at the most, and then open a second location, because it's really hard to manage and keep that many people going and growing, especially when I wanted everyone to be employees by at that point. I had in my head, I'm not going to have any more contractors. I need employees to even break even here.
Yeah.
And so 4 of my contractors left. They had 2 of them were opening their own salon, and the 2 other went with them. And it was a huge, huge blow to my plans for that space, mm-hmm. because there I was adding, we had 10 chairs upstairs. We were moving into this larger space to 16 chairs. and four of my people were leaving.
Yeah.
I lived off tax returns for the first 6 months. Luckily, Obama had given a tax break to businesses taking out a loan, and it was a big enough tax break for me to live off of it. And I borrowed money from a friend a couple times. So no one knew how hard that struggle was to keep it afloat. I mean, it really was on the brink of shutting down, and I pushed through it and I persevered, and I always know that there's a blessing in disguise there. I was like, you know what? This is great. All your contractors are gone now. You can hire only employees. The margins are higher. You've just got to weather the storm.
Yeah.
And I did. And I came out on top. I just had to really humble myself at that point. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. But you had a beautiful space as a result.
Thank you. I do. Gorgeous. We love it. And that was, and I'll get to, last year, we've hit that point where we were growing, and every station was getting full. And I'll get into how I got a business consultant, but I had a business consultant. I said, let's walk through the space and let's make it, I don't know what word I'm looking for, just utilize the space better, obviously, because we had this room that was supposed to be a waxing room, but then the square footage of it wasn't even breaking even on the waxing that we were doing. Then we tried to do lash extensions and that wasn't working. Then we tried to turn it into a nail room and that wasn't working, because I know hair and I know that's how I know how to push and make successful. So we were like, let's knock out this room, this wall, move the front desk. And we actually added 8 more chairs. So we went from 16 chairs to now 24 chairs in a 3,400 square foot space. And that's a year ago we did that.
And you moved the beauty away.
We did. It's just straight salon services. We do all our waxing at the shampoo bowls. You can have several pots and you can do that. You don't need a separate room. I mean, unless you're doing bikini waxing or something like that.
Please don't do that in the shampoo bowls.
Yeah. Just facial waxing. Okay.
Thanks for clarifying that. That's good.
Yes. Of course. And so, and that's what now we're at. We've got about 6 people at the front desk. I have a manager, an assistant manager, and, a staff, total staff of about 32 people.
Yeah. Now, I know you've got some fantastic tips for us today, but before we do that, I really want to explore your journey to coming off the floor. Because that's quite a recent thing for you, and that's something that I speak to a lot of freeing yourself up from on the floor, and I've been through that experience myself, and it's a blessing and it's a trauma at the same time. So I would love to share that journey with us.
Well, like I said, when I first opened Urban Betty, I was working 6 days a week. I mean, I really started actually having health problems from it. I'm sure everyone in the hair industry, we all know. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to cut down and only work 5 days a week. And then it was like, okay, several more years went by and I was like, okay, I'm only going to work every other Saturday. Couple more years went by. I was like, okay, I'm going to only work 4 days a week. Another year went by. I just slowly, I was like, okay, Tuesdays are going to be my admin day. Then I'm going to work 3 days a week.
Yep.
Then I'm going to work 2 days a week. And then last year I was working 2 half days. And then January, I finally cut the cord. I had this number in my head, like, when I'm 40, I'm done doing hair. It's too much. It's almost like I tell people, they are like, oh, don't you get bored? No, I have 33 employees. I don't get bored. There's so much to do. If I was just doing hair or just owning a larger salon, that's different, but wanting to, and my goals are to start a family too. And, obviously my biological clock is ticking. And so I need to just relax a little bit. So what helped me also be able to slowly to really figure out how to get out from behind the chair, because that was what was giving me my paycheck. The salon was not giving me my paycheck. It started to in the last few years, and we became a Summit salon through Redken. About 2.5 years ago. And Summit has been amazing for my business. My business, honestly, I don't think it would have been worth it for me to stay in business with the headaches and the small margins it was making. It just wasn't worth the stress. It would have been just better for me to go off and do hair on my own, because I was like, I'm killing myself to try and make money off of the salon, and I'm still behind the chair killing myself. And so we went to Summit, just kind of held our hands in the air, like, yeah, show us what you know, we'll see. And they set a plan for us and helped us structure our team. And so, and one of the biggest things that they gave me, and this is what I tell people, we were pricing things. And it's one of those things where most people are probably like, duh, I already do that, but I didn't know. And I was pricing, giving package deals on things. So like if you got a highlight, haircut, and a blowout, it was cheaper than just all three of those services by themselves. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they taught me, no, you can't give package deals. It's still the same amount of product, same amount of time, blah, blah, blah. So we had to like change to an a la carte menu. And they looked at the demographics and the income in my area, and we based our prices according to that because we weren't even charging enough. So everyone in the salon, services went up $5, $10, $15, just depending on what they were. And we changed our menu to a la carte. And I cannot tell you, immediately within 3 months, my bank account, I wasn't gripping my seat every time rent was due at the beginning of the month. I wasn't scared to check my bank account. There was actually money there. I was like, what is this? Oh my God. Because every month I was scrambling. The bank people, I don't tell a lot of people this. The bank was calling me every other day to see if I was going to have enough money the next day from credit cards transactions to cover the expense. You know, they were calling me, and I knew, and all the fees the bank were charging because it was constantly overdrawn. And that's not happening anymore. There's money. It's like, yeah, I was like, what is this? It's amazing. This is, and so slowly but surely actually making, they say the salon industry average is 3 to 5% profit margin, which is really sad. And that's actually good. And we at one point have been at 9%, and that's huge. And so to see it just continually stay at an even percentage and to have enough to now have health insurance for my employees and have benefits and paid time off, there's a feeling you get from being able to provide that for people and provide them a living that I can't explain. And that's what, at the end of the day, it's great. I got to retire from doing hair and I own a business, but to be able to provide that for people, that's an amazing feeling.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done, because that's a real journey.
Yes.
Do you know, you have to be brave to put your prices up and make bold moves like that.
You do, because you piss people off. And they said, you know, about 1% of your clients are going to get angry and they're going to leave, but the rest probably aren't going to bat an eye. And and they gave us a great script to say and just tools on how to do it. And it worked out beautifully. It was a rocky few months, myself included, because not only was I having to tell my entire staff, we're changing everything, I was having to tell my entire clientele. Mm. So I was having to go through two phases of it. And it was a little intense. Oh, and I was getting married that year too, but no big deal.
But it worked out well and put you in good stead from then onward.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I must say my own experience is not too dissimilar than yours.
Really?
You know, every year stopping one day and stopping, you know, another day. But I have to say every time I dropped a day, my business grew and we made more money. And
yes.
So the time I was, and it took me to have babies to have the strength to say, no, I'm no more here. Especially those clients, I had to have clients that I'd done for 20 years.
Yeah, same and here.
Yeah, it's really tough to say to them, no, I'm sorry, but I found those babies were a really good excuse. You know, it's like, okay, I'm actually not now.
Totally.
And it was an excuse that people actually were okay with. They empathized with me, you know, rather than feeling angry at me. But it wasn't till I was completely off the floor that we became extremely profitable, because my focus was on the team. My team were my clients. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. I give people an example that when I first saw kind of a sneak preview of that is I had sprained my ankle really bad and I never call in sick to work. I don't know, you know, I'm up there, I'm dying, whatever. And I was like, no, I didn't even miss a day of work. And my ankle was like bad. Like someone had to pick me up and drive me. And so I was in the break room that day icing my ankle in between clients. I finally let my assistant do my blow dries. I've never even been letting her do blowouts. And
yeah.
And we had one of our most profitable days we've ever had when I was sitting in the break room with my foot up, not able to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's powerful, isn't it?
It is. And I just thought, oh my gosh, if this is just a glimpse of what the universe has in store for me, then I need to let this go and let it go slowly, you know. And you're right. And I'm just now doing that. So I love hearing that from you, and I welcome that. Please bring the abundance. I will take it. It's you know, it's time.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that's a really great segue to you've brought us three amazing tips. Let's start with the one around team.
Okay. Yeah. My team is, you know, obviously it's pretty large now, and so it's hard to keep that one-on-one connection with people when you have that many people. So I wanted to set up something where I could check in with them and know them on a personal level. And so every other month every week I'm meeting with people, but there's so many people, they have a meeting with me every other month, and it's a 30-minute coffee date. We don't talk about work. I mean, they can if they want, but we talk about like our families and our feelings and what's going on in our lives. And we truly, I call it a coffee connection. Mm-hmm. We make that connection, and it helped on so many levels, because sometimes you would wonder like, what's been going on with so-and-so? She seems quiet lately, or is she upset? And then when I actually would sit down with them and learn what was going on in their home life, it clicked for me. I could know and be empathetic and not be like, well, they just don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. No, so-and-so's mom is living with them, and she, you know, is, you know, not working and things like that. So to have that connection with your team and just take that time out for them. And, you know, I pace it. I do 4 of those a week. So that way after 2 months, everyone I've kind of rotated through, and I do it either at the beginning of their day or right before they come in for 30 minutes. So it doesn't interfere too much with their schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant. I wish I did more of that. Yeah, no, that's really, really good. Okay. Now, you were going to share with us a little tip around social media, and I just want to say you've got a rocking social media following.
Thank you.
27,500 followers on Instagram.
Thank you.
That doesn't happen by accident.
No, that's a lot of hard work, and that is me. I do the social media. I am a social media geek. I met my husband on Twitter. So,
wow.
Yeah. And I attribute that to anytime you see a social media class online, anything, go to it, take it, get all the education you can. That's what meet with bloggers. I met with a blogger in town who has 100,000 followers. She gave me some tips, and that's what helped. I'll take anybody who's got it. I'll tell you what helped me is making your page look beautiful. That's one, because if people see a beautiful page, they want to follow it, get some sort of consistent theme, lighting, patterns, whatever. We have the circles and squares. That's kind of our pattern, so it looks pretty.
Yeah.
And posting something, at least one thing every single day, keeping up with your content so you have constant engagement and engaging with other people. If you don't engage with other people, you don't look real. They don't know. So that's another little thing. Those are kind of my three top things.
So let's talk a little bit about engagement, because I think sometimes it's the hidden secret that that we don't really understand. We need this thing called engagement, but what is it and what do I do to achieve it? So tell me one thing that you do under the heading engagement that you do on a daily basis.
Liking other people's photos, going to hashtags that are similar to yours, liking their photos, commenting on their photos. You know, just doing that as much as you can. And if people, you know, comment on your photos, responding back to them, keeping up with that, that's a big thing. And so that's what I'll tell people, is just really being, not just going on and looking at your friend's feed, reaching out to other people who aren't your friends. And if you like their stuff, more than likely they're going to go back to your page, look at your stuff and like it.
Absolutely.
And like you and follow you. Yeah.
And so are you glued to your phone constantly all day, or do you have scheduled time? How do you manage the time factor?
You know, I'm very type A, but with social media, I'm not as type A. I do it very organically. It may be I got to the gym early and I've got 15 minutes. I'm going to post something. I'm going to engage a little bit. Okay, I'm at home. I've got an hour here. I'm going to do that. I just find pockets of time where I do it. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Great tip.
Thank you.
And what would be, tell us your third tip. We've talked a little bit about the sort of the balance of working on and in your business. Tell us a little bit about what would be your tip to other people who want to do the same and come away from being on the floor?
Just to trust, just to slowly, I mean, I had to get an assistant and double book, obviously a stop to doing hair 6 days a week. I was doing hair 6 days a week because I didn't have an assistant. So bringing on assistant helped, you know, and just trusting. And if your business starts making a profit, obviously you can start giving yourself an income from that profit. And so you have to be able to see that first. And so that's just the way I did it. Letting people help me. Yeah. That was a big one. And it was just slowly letting that go and slowly, slowly changing my schedule. 'Cause you don't want to go from working 5 days a week to none. I mean, that's going to be way too shocking and freak your clients out too. So I'd really whittled my clientele down, and most of them went to people who were my former assistants, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was nice because they already knew them, and that's the easiest way I can explain it.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, so as we look to wrapping up, let me ask you, do you have a quote or a mantra or something that you live by? Because I know as an entrepreneur or a business owner, you know, sometimes it can feel a little bit lonely at the top.
Yeah, for sure.
What is it that makes you, what keeps you strong? What's your quote or mantra?
It's funny because I used to watch Project Runway, and Tim Gunn would always say, make it work. And I just got that in my head. And anytime it was like, Shelly, we have three clients here. And I'm like, well, we're just going to make it work. We're going to make it work. Like, we're going to figure it out. We're not going to run and hide or tell everyone to go home. That is my mantra, make it work. And it's so funny because some of the girls at work, if they heard that, they'd be like, oh, that's what Shelly says. Because it'll just be like, oh, you know, whatever just happened, this person, and my comeback to that is always, well, let's make it work. And so I hope that helps.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah. I love that program too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Where do you get your inspiration from? What book or webinar or podcast do you listen to that helps you, that you can suggest to salon owners that are listening?
I would suggest the book Fierce Conversations. I'm blanking on the author. I went to the Bumble and Bumble Academy in New York and took the Fierce Conversations class. And what it is just teaching you how to communicate and talk with people and how to get your point across and how to get it across quickly, even if it's with conflict or whatever. And so I went to that class. I read the book. I got the book on audio. I listened to it on audio. I mean, I should probably listen to it every single year because every time I do, I come away with something. And we've even implemented something from that book called The Decision Tree. And it's a great thing because I used to have all my employees, they would just come to me and ask me every single question. Well, that gets exhausting and you don't have time to do that. And so we had to go through, is this a decision you can make yourself? Is this a decision my assistant manager knows how to handle, my salon manager, or me? Like, go through all the channels. Let me be your last resort because I can't answer everyone's questions. And now it's gotten to a certain point where sometimes I don't know the answer. That's someone else is taking care of that entirely, you know? And so that was a great thing I took away from that book, as well as just how to communicate with people effectively and honestly.
I love that, actually. We had a sort of a similar process, but we never named it like that. I really like that.
Yeah.
But it's about training your team to think first before they ask. And I would always encourage them to come to me or whoever was the right person with an attempt at a solution themselves. Like, don't come to me until you've got an attempt at what the solution might be. And so I learned to before they came and asked to swap shifts or a day off, that they'd already gone and problem solved and found someone to swap it with, or, you know, they'd done the problem solving themselves. And I think the biggest thing for the people that I work with is that learning to give things back. And when people come and ask, sometimes it's just easier to answer, but actually say, you know what, it's not my role or it's not my job to answer this. You need to go and ask front of house. And, you know,
it's okay to say, I don't know. That's very powerful.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually convenient not to know.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, I had to like check my ego out. Like, it's okay to say you don't know. And it's better to say you don't know than try to make up an answer, because that always never works out.
Yeah, and otherwise also you're the busy one that everyone goes to, and then you're never free.
Right. Yeah. So now that's my manager. But she wasn't behind the chair doing hair, so it worked. It was a lot easier when you're in the middle of doing however many clients per day. You can't you can only put out so many fires.
For sure. Yes. Look, it's been amazing talking to you today, Shelley. You've had a wealth of knowledge and insight, and I know that our salon owners are going to just love the story. So I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Larissa. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Now, look, people are going to want to come and stalk you and find where you are. What's your dub and your social page address?
So it's urbanbetty.com. And my handle on Instagram is Urban Betty. That's my personal one. The salon is at Urban Betty Salon on Instagram. Twitter, same thing.
Fantastic. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective Podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective Podcast on iTunes or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa, and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.